This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and thanks for listening.
Listening to you, I get the music. Gazing at you, I get the heat. Following you, I climb the mountain. I get excitement at your feet.
Why, we're always listening to you.
Right behind you, I see the million.
The Who. What a throwback there. But The Who will be touring in 2015, and that's one of the musical milestones to look for or to dread this year. And there's at least one more on the horizon. That's Chick Corea and vocalist Bobby McFerrin years ago meandering their way through a cover of the jazz standard Autumn Leaves, Les Feuilles Mortes in French. Tis the season, apparently sometime this year, for the unstoppable Bob Dylan, who will release an album of covers where he is expected, that's right, to take a stab at this song, Autumn Leaves. I won't even try. That's all coming up later this hour. The holidays are over, though, on this January 2nd, 2015, but for the mind-numbing football that will carpet the coming weekend, we're going to jump beyond the goalpost today and help you anticipate a few things in the economy, in space, in music, as we said, and of course we'll kick the tires of the brand new Congress about to convene as the first order of business in this year. Todd Zwillick on politics, Heidi Moore on the economy, John Schaefer on music, Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman on movies, Manoush Zomorodi on tech, and Emily Rice on space. Takeaway septet, if you count me on the droning hostophone. It's an open mic. You can sit in as well. As always, hopes and fears of 2015. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to tell us what you're most looking forward to or dreading in the upcoming year. And we begin this hour with a look ahead to the state of the economy in 2015. If the slide in oil prices was the big story of 2014, then OPEC might just be the big story of 2015. Heidi Moore, once again, finance and economics editor at The Guardian. OPEC has shown in the new year that it can't bring the price of oil up anymore. Apparently, it can only bring it down. Go figure.
It's probably terrifying, but they've brought it on themselves. They're playing a giant game of chicken. Essentially, what they want to do is cut production because we have an oversupply of oil. We have way too much oil. OPEC wants to pull back on production because then prices rise. If you have less supply, you have higher prices. But OPEC refuses to cut back unless Russia cuts back, unless other countries cut back, unless the U.S. cuts back, and that's not going to happen. So what they're doing is saying, you know what? We're going to let you feel the same pain that we feel. We're going to let oil go to $60 a barrel, to 50, to 40 if necessary, and then you will all see things the way we see them, the way OPEC sees them, which is that we have to start cutting production. So it's a giant game of chicken, which is unsustainable. It has to stop at some point.
Well, it's also pretty easy to do the math. I mean, the Russian government, acting very Soviet, is dependent upon $100 a barrel oil to fund its government and its currency reserves. North Dakota depends on $100 a barrel oil to make its fracking and shale operations viable. So the Saudis are going to win this.
They are going to win this, but the question is how much damage is done to everyone before they do. And this is a Pyrrhic victory. Even if they win, they lose, right? Because no matter what, we have an oversupply of oil, and that's going to continue to be the case for some time. OPEC's next meeting, I believe, is not until June. So they're probably not going to meet to do anything about prices again until then. And imagine if we've seen this much damage to world economies from falling oil prices in only the month of December and, you know, and part of November. Imagine what we're going to see between January and June.
So in the dictionary, will we have to change the definition of the word cartel to mean empty boast?
We will, and it's about time. It's not just OPEC that has seen the definition of cartel essentially become completely worthless. There have been other cartels that have broken down, and my personal favorite is the envelope cartel. So there were five envelope makers who met together at meetings that they called mini golf. And they would try to set envelope prices. And so when you're buying your Christmas cards or your birthday cards or your anniversary cards, those prices were fixed in some cases. And I think it's a really interesting case of how there is nothing too small for a cartel to try to influence, but also that they often get caught.
Who broke the envelope cartel?
It was regulators, but there was a whistleblower, and the regulators made sure to say that he did not mail in his tip because it would have been too expensive.
You can be a hero on so many levels in this complicated 21st century. One thing we do have an oversupply of is debt. And the slide of oil may actually bear on a debt crisis in 2015 on some level. Where do you put credit in the credit markets right now?
It's something that we're all going to have to watch. We have to watch credit and debt for ourselves as consumers, for companies, and for countries. So for ourselves as consumers, we have $3.2 trillion of debt in America. A lot of that is student loan debt, and defaults on that are rising. Something like 1 in 6 student loans default, and that's a really, really high rate. So that's one form of debt that we have to watch out for. Another one is auto loans. We've had a lot of subprime lending in auto loans, and that cannot be good because you're seeing the same dynamics that happened in the mortgage market where banks are lending to people who may not be able to pay back the loans, who are making the kinds of loans that aren't really wise from a risk standpoint. And that creates a big subprime issue that's very similar to the mortgage market. The subprime car market is not – auto loan market is not as big as mortgages, but it's still something we want to watch because that could get out of hand. And then for companies, dropping oil prices really have hurt energy companies, and energy companies are a big part of our economy. You'd be surprised how much depends on energy companies, how much they invest in their equipment, how many people they hire, their compensation, all of that. So falling oil prices will expose that a lot of those companies borrowed a great deal in order to make those investments and to build their businesses.
Well,
and that could create trouble.
Let's scarily pick up the hood here and look beneath. I mean, you say similar to the mortgage crisis. Is it the case that debt from capital investments in the oil industry, student loans, car loans, are they bundled into debt-backed securities in the same way mortgages are, and that we may have no idea what these derivatives are when they finally, you know, hit the wall?
It's definitely the case for the auto loans. As a matter of fact, last year, those bundled auto loans that were very similar to the bundled mortgage loans, at least in structure, those hit a near record. So the record high was in 2005. I think we all remember 2005 because it was also the height of the mortgage market. And so last year, you saw banks bundle more of those auto loans, break them up, sell them off. And once you have that supply at the Wall Street level that's divorced from the real world level of our borrowing, you know that that creates trouble. We've seen that before. It just takes vigilance. It doesn't mean that we're going to have another crash, but it means that regulators should be paying attention, that banks should be paying attention, and most of all, that we should be paying attention and making sure that we're not signing loans that could get us in trouble.
And you think somehow a Republican-dominated Congress in 2015 is going to reinvigorate the regulatory environment around these kinds of securities?
Well, I have to say that their early actions are not promising in terms of reinvigorating any kind of objection to corporate advancement. One of the first things that even the lame duck Congress did with Republican influence was to try to repeal part of the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act that protected our savings accounts from being used to bet on major derivatives, right? Banks need money to bet on derivatives and to help companies build those derivatives and to hedge against falling oil prices. And banks don't know where they're going to get that money. They want to get it from our savings accounts because that's how they make loans. They use our savings accounts to make loans. Now they want to use our savings accounts to bet on derivatives. And Congress agreed that they should.
You know, before we go, a guy who runs a hedge fund said to me recently that 2015 is the year we're going to learn that zero is just another number, that we will see negative interest rates multiplying and proliferating throughout the economy, where people will park their money in accounts where they pay the bank, where at a below zero interest rate, because that's how insecure things are right now.
Yeah, I think that it's really hard to leave behind the insecurity of the financial crisis, first of all, right? That has all stayed with us. We've seen it in joblessness. We've seen it in low wage growth. We've seen it on a very real level in the middle class. But another reason that you are seeing what are essentially negative interest rates are, think of when you put your money in your savings account, right? You're getting almost no return because interest rates are zero, and yet you're paying quite a bit in fees. So you're already paying your bank to hold your money, right? It's not the other way around. That's already happening to some degree. Now, the thing is, people do believe that this is going to be the year that the Federal Reserve raises interest rates. That will be significant, but it will likely also be modest. If you have a lot of money in the bank, it probably means only a few more pennies a month.
Heidi Moore, finance and economics editor at The Guardian. A few more pennies a month this year. That's what we have to look forward to. Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you.
Put anything in the tip jar recently, huh? Have you? How much spare change is your savings account getting you? Will you have more spare change this year? Congress wasn't acting very thrifty last month when it passed the government spending bill, like $1 trillion worth. It caused Elizabeth Warren to get all bent out of shape. Todd Zwillick will talk more about that coming up. But the U.S. Space Agency made out like a bandit on Capitol Hill in December. The budget went up $18 billion for 2015. NASA only asked for $17.5 billion. That's a nice little half-billion-dollar cushion for building rovers and rockets and telescopes. How thrilled are the space people over that? Emily Rice is very much a space person. On Twitter, she describes herself as a professional astro-nerd. We're going to talk to her seriously about the year in space exploration while she's wearing a lovely blouse decorated with astro-authentic star clusters. And no apologies for Emily.
The reasons that I do this is, number one, I love it. But number two, I like that women can participate in science without having to, and even men, to lose their interest in fashion. Like, a lot of the times we think, if you care too much about clothes, or if you care too much about makeup, or, you know, some other hobby, then you don't care enough about the science. And I think that's absolutely not true, that we're people, we need other interests. We shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't separate boys and girls into things that they're interested in. We shouldn't say, oh, you're too much of a girly girl to do science. You know, I want to do science in a full-length moon ball gown.
To get more fashion tips from Emily Rice, you can visit our website, thetakeaway.org, and we'll hear more from Emily Rice later this hour on what she's looking forward to this year in space exploration. What do you have to look forward to this year? Marianne called in, very excited to greet a new member of her family.
2015, I'm expecting my fifth grandchild, a granddaughter whose name is Grace, and we're all very, very excited about that. Happy New Year.
From Austin, Texas, 2015 has two big events, visiting our daughter in her Peace Corps assignment in Macedonia and my son's wedding in September of 2015. Glenn Saperstein from Commerce, Michigan, hopefully watching my youngest son join his older brother as a student at the University of Michigan. We're rooting for that youngest son too, Glenn.
Hi, this is Kamala Whittemore from Rutland, Vermont. In 2015, I am most looking forward to my daughter's wedding.
Wishing everyone a great 2015. Tell us what you plan to do this year. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Coming up, Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, on the changes in Congress and politics we can expect with the 114th Congress. And later this hour, Soundcheck's John Schaefer on the music he's excited about in 2015. Later this hour, stay with us.
Support for The Takeaway comes from the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International, in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Officially in session on Monday, the 114th Congress convenes. And for the first time in 8 years, Republicans hold a majority in both the House and the Senate. On Capitol Hill, Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, is with us. Hi, Todd.
Hi, John.
So what new faces will we see in the leadership as this new Congress flexes its muscles? GOP on the Senate side, of course, and of course on the Republican side with a bigger majority than ever.
Bigger majority than ever. You're still going to see Speaker John Boehner at the very top, the Speaker of the House. He's a familiar face. New majority leader, a guy who's been in the leadership for a while, but, you know, casual followers of politics may not know Kevin McCarthy. He's the new Republican majority leader. He's from California. You're going to be seeing quite a bit of McCarthy now. It's his job, along with Boehner, to set the House agenda, to take votes that challenge President Obama, make him take tough vetoes, and try to position Republicans to a place with their votes and their agenda that makes them appeal to a national party. One more guy, Steve Scalise. He's the new majority whip. You've probably never heard of him. He's from Louisiana. He's a Tea Party favorite, a real conservative. Over in the Senate, of course, Mitch McConnell, the new majority leader. That's huge for him, a lifelong ambition, and he's finally got it after 8 years. The big new face in Senate leadership, Harry Reid's still in charge of the Democratic side, but Elizabeth Warren has got a place in the Democratic leadership. She's pretty far down the pecking order, you know, fifth down there. But she's got a place at the table, and Democrats are smart to put her there because Elizabeth Warren is becoming the face and the mouth, if you want, of liberal progressives, anti-corporate and anti-Wall Street progressives.
Who does Congress work for? Does it work for the millionaires, the billionaires, the giant companies with their armies of lobbyists and lawyers? Or does it work for all the people? And now the House of Representatives is about to show us the worst of government for the rich and powerful. The House is about to vote on a budget deal, a deal negotiated behind closed doors that slips in a provision that would let derivatives traders on Wall Street gamble with taxpayer money and get bailed out by the government when their risky bets threaten to blow up our financial system.
Now, of course, that spending bill did get signed, but this issue of derivatives trading and regulations from the federal government on derivatives trading, that's not going to go away.
And keep in mind, during that speech, Elizabeth Warren wasn't just talking to Republicans. In fact, she was talking to Democrats, directly challenging Democrats to vote against that bill, ultimately, which, you know, many of them did, but it still passed with Democratic support and major support from President Obama. And I think Elizabeth Warren was sending a major message to the president. And this is key for Democrats in 2015. Look, Barack Obama now has to negotiate with Senator McConnell and Speaker Boehner. Harry Reid is out. So that's the three-way negotiation that goes on any big bill that they try to do, whether it's corporate tax reform, which is worth a lot of money, or a trade deal, or the next spending bill. And Elizabeth Warren is saying to the president, and has said loud and clear, as you negotiate these bills, be very, very careful about how friendly they are to corporate special interests and what kind of deals you make. Because I can make it very, very painful for you on the left, Mr. President, if you give away too much. And he doesn't want to have major divisions in the Democratic coalition flare up before 2016. That's the challenge Republicans are going to make repeatedly.
The other big question for 2015 is, has President Obama, you know, rendered moot a huge platform for conservatives that really goes back to the 1960s, this warming with Cuba? You really wonder what's going through, former Cuban or claiming Cuban lineage Republican Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
Just about every Republican candidate in the country campaigned saying, if you elect us, we will stop President Obama's amnesty. What I'm here urging my fellow Republicans to do is very, very simple. Do what you said you would do.
Yeah! Do it!
Honor your commitments. Answer the question today the exact same way you would have answered it a month ago when you were campaigning before the voters.
Ted Cruz, ironically, whose family benefited from the amnesty for Cuban exiles, talking about the immigration fight, which will certainly be a big deal in 2015.
Look, if Republicans are going to exploit Democratic divisions over Dodd-Frank and corporatism in Wall Street, then Democrats are surely going to exploit Republican divisions over immigration. And that's where you heard Ted Cruz right there. He is the embodiment, he is the face, and like Elizabeth Warren, the mouth of pressure on Mitch McConnell and on Speaker Boehner. Now, those two people, and Speaker Boehner in particular, are under enormous pressure now to respond and respond big to President Obama's executive action on immigration. They've kind of deferred that into February. And that's the first huge political fight you're going to see at the end of February when funding for the Department of Homeland Security runs out. That's when Speaker Boehner's under enormous pressure from the right to go at Obama hard.
How does Obamacare fare in 2015 now that the Congress is fully Republican?
There is a huge case in front of the Supreme Court. Look, Republicans are going to take votes to repeal parts of Obamacare. Like we said, they'll try to repeal the individual mandate. They'll try to repeal some taxes. A couple of things around the edges of Obamacare, like the medical device tax, may change. The big repeal stuff, the political stuff, President Obama will veto. But the Supreme Court is where the Obamacare news really is in 2015. There's a case called King. Some people call it Halbig. It's actually Halbig and King combined. This is a place where the Supreme Court will decide if a quirk in the actual language, the writing of the Obamacare statute, means that federal subsidies for people's health insurance premiums under Obamacare can only operate in states where the governors and the legislature said, yeah, we want to have exchanges. Now, most states don't have those. Governors and legislatures, especially those led by Republicans, rejected the exchanges. There's a part of that statute, as we've probably all heard, that says the money can only go to states where states have state exchanges. If the Supreme Court rules, this isn't a typo, that Congress actually intended to have the money only go to these few states, it could really pull a thread on Obamacare and undo the whole thing. It would be a disaster for the policy. It would mean federal subsidies for people's insurance in many, many, many states would go away. It would be a major danger for Obamacare. The Supreme Court is the place to watch.
Finally, in 2015, does the Congress show signs of cooperating with the White House on military affairs, particularly the fight against ISIS in Iraq and Syria?
There is a bipartisan move, John, on Capitol Hill to pass a new AUMF, Authorization of Use of Military Force, to try to give some direction and congressional approval to President Obama's war against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, and maybe even beyond. The big foreign policy debate in early 2015 in Congress is over ISIS, Iraq, Syria, and beyond. There's no question about it.
One of many things the president will get, either positive and negatively, from this Republican Congress in 2015. Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent, Happy New Year.
And happy 2015 to you, John.
For a while now, we've all been on Apple standard time. There's a milestone coming up this year, and it may be the most important tech rollout of 2015, the Apple Watch, one of a number of techie wearables, which is kind of perfect for Manoush Damarodi, host of WNYC's New Tech City podcast. And just remind us, Manoush, New Tech City is all about...
It's where digital gets personal.
I see.
So I look at where the gadgets are going to change your actual life, your relationships with your family, your relationships with yourself, your relationships with your health, John, because I think 2015 is going to be the year of not just self-quantifying, you know, tracking everything you do, but having it all together in one place and maybe sharing it with your doctor, maybe even your workplace. This is where things are going. And I think the Apple Watch is going to be the key thing to watch in 2015.
Now, I tried the Jawbone thing around the wrist.
Go?
Well, we did that the thing about sleep.
Yeah, we tracked our sleep.
Right, and that was an interesting sort of episode, but the Jawbone didn't stick with me.
Me neither.
Yeah, so I think the question is, will the Apple Watch be fundamentally different and go over some threshold that Jawbone wasn't able to with the two of us?
I think you're absolutely right. There is no mainstream smartwatch out there yet. And I think Apple has this ability to appeal to consumers with design, also with integration. So this idea that there's a watch that not only – or a band, a wearable that not only tracks – one thing, how much you're walking, but also you can read your email. It's also going to have Apple Pay on it. It can also tell you whether you're mostly standing or sitting during the day. It will also tell you your heart rate. All these things brought in one place. Now, look, the price tag's not cheap, $350, but if it can be one place to go and look sexy at the same time, then potentially Apple has another winner.
We should remind people, though, it's not a replacement for a smartphone.
No.
You have to use it in tandem with a smartphone.
Correct. That is absolutely right.
The hint of the price is $349, that you've just sort of said that. What are the hints of how many in the rollout, how many units Apple thinks they can sell here?
I mean, from we don't know. The indicators always come from what's being produced in China, and they're thinking it's about 40 million units.
That's big.
It's big. Yeah, totally big. But then here are some of the questions. You know, what happens to all this health data that is collected? The FTC is talking to Apple to make sure, it's sensitive stuff, right? Things that your insurance company would like to know, things that your employer would like to know, things that they could use to potentially up your rate or maybe say, you know, you're not being as productive as you think you are. That's the question, is who gets to see this data? There's no policy around it. There's no privacy protections. They don't have to stick to HIPAA.
Can your insurance company change your rate because you're sitting down or standing up? I mean, it seems like there's a limitation of the data that they're looking at. It's not like the watch can go, you are now a heroin addict.
Look, it's not going to happen in 2015 that I think people are saying you must stand for at least 6 hours a day or else your rate is going to increase. That's not happening yet. But this is how things change. When you don't start to think about it at the very beginning, you look up and suddenly that's the way it's done, right? I think people have to be, I think, understand that these are issues going in. And if we don't ask the right questions now, we could turn around in 2016 and the policies could be in place.
You know what's more likely, I think? Mm-hmm. And I'm just speculating now. And
Go ahead.
I'm not on your show. I think it's more likely that an insurance company will come up with an app that will basically allow you to behave your rate down and that you can see that on
the
watch.
Totally.
You're
absolutely
right. Go to the gym and your rate goes down.
Well, they already have that in a lot of places, that if you get a gym membership and you prove that you've been there at least 4 to 6 times a month, your rate does go down. That exists already. My sister had that at her previous job. This is not that far away from that.
Brain implants in 2015?
Not yet. I'll be back in like 2020, I think.
All right. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, host of WNYC's New Tech City. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
2015 won't see another season of Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos, but you can't cancel space exploration any more than you can erase Pluto by declaring it's not a planet. Emily Rice is back with us. She's a professor of astrophysics at the College of Staten Island and CUNY Graduate Center and a researcher at the American Museum of Natural History. For Emily, 2015 is all about
New Horizons. New Horizons is going to reach Pluto. That's definitely by far the most exciting thing that's going to happen in 2015. It just woke up just a little while ago, and it's going to continue getting closer and closer to Pluto until it does a flyby of the entire Pluto system. I think one of the big landmarks is at the beginning of May, it will reach better than Hubble resolution because it's gotten close enough to the system to be able to take better images than we have. And the Hubble images that we have are the best images so far. And so for a couple months at least, we'll have better than Hubble resolution capabilities to study the system.
And part of the scientific interest in Pluto relates to this controversy over whether it's a planet or not. You'll be able to tell whether it's a resident of some of the other features in the solar system that aren't, strictly speaking, planets.
I think whether or not Pluto is a planet is really residing on us. And not necessarily.
Right.
There is definitely a lot that we can learn about. We want to learn about the moons of the system, whether, you know, if they're similar in composition, so how they formed. We want to learn about the composition of Pluto itself and the potential atmosphere around Pluto. It's probably very small, very tenuous, but there could be gases and ions and things like that that are given off by Pluto. But whether or not we call Pluto a planet, I think, is really on us, on humanity, and how we want to understand these things.
Well, and that's the issue, really, is Pluto is far enough out there that it interacts with other features like the Kuiper Belt.
Yes.
And we'll be able to know more about that and actually see some of the Kuiper Belt bodies.
Yeah, that was very exciting that the New Horizons team, so there's a lot of scientists that are working on this mission, and some of the teams found objects that the spacecraft can visit after it visits Pluto.
And that's all coming up in the future, 2015 and the rest of the decade. What else for 2015?
There should be a lot of things that are ongoing. That's one of the things that's exciting about astronomy and the exploration of the solar system is a lot of these missions are very, very long term. So Curiosity is still on Mars. MESSENGER is still in orbit around Mercury.
And Orion may take another step. May take another step.
Yeah, well, there's going to be more things going on in space travel, yeah.
What would you like Orion to do now that they've got that capability? I mean, that was a huge rocket we saw launch.
I'm very excited for people to go to Mars. That would be amazing.
Well, of course.
But honestly, this is a little bit weird, I think, and maybe unpopular, but I would like people to go back to the moon. You know, Mars is very exciting because we haven't been there before, but the moon, we see it. Everybody can see it. Even from New York City, we can see it. And I would love to look at the moon and know that there are people there. There's still tons that we could do. Set up a lunar base, make a telescope on the moon, build a telescope on the moon. These things, I think, are not outside the realm of possibility. And so the moon could be very, very useful scientifically.
The Cassini spacecraft. Remind me of what that spacecraft is.
Cassini is a spacecraft that's in orbit around Saturn. And it's been there for a while. Right. The biggest thing that it did, arguably, was to launch the Huygens probe onto Titan. But Cassini is still there. It's still going. It's still getting new images. It's an absolutely fantastic spacecraft. And the orientation of Saturn relative to the sun is changing very, very slowly because Saturn has a very long year. But as that changes, Cassini can do new observations about Saturn and about its rings and about the moons and things like that and see how kind of the weather and the interactions between Saturn's rings and moons changes as the Saturn season changes. And so that's very exciting to watch that. It's slow, but still exciting.
I mean, I know you're a real, you know, astrophysicist and all that, but I suspect you're up on sci-fi probably
a little bit,
as I am. And, I mean, am I mistaken, but isn't there supposed to be some action, serious action on Europa or Io?
Europa and Io are Jupiter moons, yeah.
Oh, so Cassini isn't even anywhere near there.
No, Cassini isn't anywhere near there. But there are new things going on with the Jupiter moons. So there's a potential NASA mission that's being proposed now that's called the Europa Clipper that would go to Europa, and that would be very, very exciting. So that's a NASA Mohawk guy who's became famous during the Curiosity landing, has moved on from Mars to the Europa Clipper mission, which is exciting.
Oh, the Mohawk dude. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Bobek Ferdowsi, yeah.
All right, well, have a great 2015.
Thanks, you too.
Emily Rice, thanks so much. Emily Rice is professor of astrophysics at the College of Staten Island and CUNY Graduate Center and a researcher at the American Museum of Natural History.
I was a stand-up tomato, a juicy, sexy beefsteak tomato.
I understand what you're saying, and your comments are valuable, but I'm going to ignore your advice.
Honey, this is only the beginning. Stick with me, and we'll claw our way to the top.
Hey, weren't you on TV last night?
Yes, I was.
How would it suit you to be famous again?
I know it will please you, you conceited devil.
2015, a whole year stretched out ahead of us, a year full of movies. Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, Movie Date co-hosts, are kind of a interactive trailer for us back to discuss the movies that we can expect to see this year. Welcome back, guys.
Hi, John.
And what are you looking forward to in 2015?
I'm looking forward to some better movies, that's for sure.
I saw a prediction, $11 billion in box office. That's what they're hoping for this year?
Up a little bit from this past year, right? Yeah, surprising.
Does it seem like they have some great ideas?
Well, the ticket prices are high. I'm giving the credit to the ticket prices.
Oh, yeah, that's the reason we had a better box office last year, of course. And, of course, you've got all these young movies where you've got to take your kids, right? So you've got a built-in 4 or 5 person purchase each time you go.
All right. So someone will make some money this year. What are you anxious to see?
I am dying to see Pitch Perfect 2. And as you know, John, I was a huge fan of the first one.
Two bottle whiskey farther away. And I sure would like some sweet company. And I'm leaving tomorrow. What do you say? When I'm gone.
So a competition movie, that's the same premise. My girls love Pitch Perfect.
Oh, yes. A cappella competitive singing. You have this one girl group which goes up against groups that are mixed gender or dude groups which tend to do stronger in the a cappella competitive scene. And internally we have the conflicts and we have lots and lots of singing. And I just cannot think of anything more joyous and silly and fun that'll make you skip out of the theater smiling. I just love the first one. So in the second one, a lot of our favorites are back. Rebel Wilson, Anna Kendrick, Elizabeth Banks, Brittany Snow. But then we also have some fun additions, Hailee Steinfeld and Katie Siegel. So I think it's going to be a good time.
Strictly Ballroom meets singing. And it's a sequel. So what are you looking forward to, Rafer?
I'm looking forward to a new film called Chappie. It's by the director of District 9 and Elysium. I love District 9. I was not that crazy about Elysium, but I think Neil Blomkamp is a really interesting guy. This is about a robot who becomes an intelligent being. And if I know Neil Blomkamp, there's going to be some sociopolitics in there somewhere.
Well, here's a tease.
Your name, Chappie.
Anything you want to do in your life, you can do.
Write poetry, have original ideas.
Wow. People are always fearful of something they don't understand.
So this is like the Turing test. If people believe it, then it's intelligent.
Then it must be intelligent.
That's really what Blomkamp has to do here.
Right, of course. You can hear, I think, from the music and the presence of the little kid there, you know, you might have a few heartstring tugs going on there. But, you know, that could work. I mean, to me, looking at the trailers, it looks a little bit like E.T., a little bit like RoboCop. That sounds like a crowd pleaser to me. So I'm looking forward to it.
Next, Kristen.
Well, again, bodice strippers. Everyone knows I love them. So we're going to see a remake of Far From the Madding Crowd this year. This is based on the Thomas Hardy novel, and it stars Carey Mulligan.
I want very much to protect you for the rest of your life. I'm not going to tell stories just to please you. You can be sure of that.
For when your time, it is past and gone, you'll care no more for you.
This will hit in the spring, and I guess bodice ripper season, right? this is a remake of a very famous movie.
Oh, yes. And, you know, who doesn't love a movie where you have lovely woman who's juggling three separate lovers. So even if you aren't into the costumes, you might just like that part of the story.
Right around the same time is your next pick, right?
Tomorrowland, a movie I don't know much about the plot. They're being a little secretive about this, but on paper it sounds pretty great. It's based on the famous Disneyland theme park, a big part of my childhood. Originally the movie was called 1952, so that tells me that there's going to be a little kitsch nostalgia futurism going on.
Retro future.
Exactly, right. Which I always love.
Which is what Star Wars is going to be about this year, which is going to be another huge release. Retro
right.
Future, exactly.
Notice I did not say I was looking forward to that,
by
the way.
Neither did I. No.
Gosh, you're such troublemakers, the two of you, I'm telling you.
But I think Tomorrowland sounds pretty good. George Clooney is in it, and the director is Brad Bird, who did The Incredibles.
Okay. Got one money clip. $47.32, one Florida State driver's license, baseball cap, one pen, one pack of Beeman's gum, and whatever that is.
That's not mine.
What's not yours?
The pen. I've never...
Well, it's not going to be as opaque as Inception, right?
That's right. I think it'll be much clearer. That's the heroine of the film being transported to some kind of past/futuristic world. You can see a small glimpse in the trailer if you go online that does make it look a bit like a Disney theme park. So maybe there's some product tie in there. Who knows?
But this isn't even Disney's big bet. That's going to be Star Wars.
That'll be Star Wars, right.
This is something Disney is very much behind, and it's got a huge cast. Clooney's in it, right?
That's right. George Clooney's in it. I think he plays a former boy genius of some sort. You know, George Clooney is great. I think Brad Bird has done some great stuff. I'm looking forward to this one.
Anything else for 2015 on the horizon?
Yeah, Rafer and I both are looking forward to a couple of biopics that are very high profile that are coming out this year. The main one for me is called Black Mass. It has two of my very favorite actors, Johnny Depp playing Whitey Bulger, the South Boston mobster, and as his brother, Benedict Cumberbatch. Yum.
I'm looking forward to, I should say crossing my fingers for Straight Outta Compton, which will be the biopic of N.W.A., the pioneering gangster rap group. Unknown cast, unknown crew, but, you know, if it works, it could be great.
Is it fair to define this year, though, as Selma and Star Wars, that those are going to be the big movies of this year, and that's what we'll be talking about in 12 months?
I think Star Wars is going to be talked about quite a bit. I'm not so sure about Selma, actually. I think that that's going to have more of a niche audience, and it's going to have a slower rollout, too.
It's tough to say. You know, one of the films I think that could be a real breakout hit that could become kind of the next King's Speech is Big Eyes, the Tim Burton film. I think that could do really well.
All right. Well, we will see. We've got most of the rest of the year to see if your predictions come true, and we'll, of course, be thrilled to be reviewing the movies of 2015 with you all year long. Rafer and Kristen, Happy New Year. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Thanks,
you
John.
Too.
Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer, co-hosts of the Movie Date podcast.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, brain training designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 60 million people worldwide. With personalized training programs to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
Finally, this hour, the coming song soundtrack of 2015 that is not Taylor Swift. Previewing the songs and performances and new artists off the mainstream and worth considering by the considerable musical tastes of our friend John Schaefer, host of WNYC's Soundcheck. Welcome back, as always, John.
Good to be here.
I mean, 2014 ends and 2015 begins, I have to say, with Taylor Swift.
Right.
That is a fact.
Yeah, she is the 600-pound gorilla in the music industry right now. She can go wherever she wants, do whatever she wants. But, you know, there's lots of smaller mammals scurrying around on the periphery who are kind of worth noting as well as we head on into the new year.
And what peripheral music and you know, gets into your mainstream, buddy?
Well, you know, there's a singer named Alex Winston. She's originally from Detroit. She's been living in Brooklyn for a number of years, kind of going back and forth. I thought her record King Khan was one of the best rock records of 2012. And she's due for a new album, not yet titled, coming out in the spring. And for folks who like Kate Bush, the English art rocker,
sure.
Everybody who hears Alex Winston sing immediately thinks of Kate Bush.
Languish, won't you leave me? 'Cause I'm trying so hard. And still I feel the weight of every pound.
I mean, the arrangement, too, it's Kate Bush.
That song is called Careless, and it is a song from her forthcoming record, which, as I said, we'll probably see sometime this spring.
So it's already dropped as a sort of hint of things to come.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And next?
Next, a band that has had a following since the turn of the century, really, the Decembrists, known as a kind of progressive slash art rock band out of Portland, Oregon.
Sure.
They have a new album coming called What a Terrible World, What a Beautiful World. And they, too, have dropped a couple of tracks from the album in advance. One of them, called Make You Better, comes with a hilarious video that allegedly finds the Decembrists in the divided city of Berlin on German TV doing a live session in 1977. About the time when most of the members of the band were actually just being born.
I loved you in the springtime. I lost you when summer came. And when you pulled backwards, I wanted you. I needed you all to make me better.
And a beautiful song from the Decembrists.
And what about big acts?
Well, they don't come much bigger than Bob Dylan.
Right.
Who is dropping an album that he's sort of been hinting at for a while. An album called Shadows in the Night, and it will be an album of standards. But he's not going, say, the Rod Stewart, Brian Ferry route, where if you're going to sing the Great American Songbook, you bring in the orchestra, the big string section, maybe a little chorus.
And he's not bringing Tony Bennett in.
He is stripping everything down to the sound of his five-piece band. And if you want to know what that could sound like, back in May of 2014, he released a single song from this forthcoming record. So this has been kicking around for a while. But it's the song Full Moon and Empty Arms. Many people will know the Frank Sinatra version. The melody actually comes from the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2. So this has been around for a while. But this is a really kind of telling, stripped down, bare bones, and yet still very kind of standard version of the song.
Full moon and empty arms. The moon is there for us to share, but where are you?
I can't believe I missed that this year.
Yeah.
There's much more to come.
There's a lot more to come. He's apparently going to do Autumn Leaves and The Night We Called It a Day. And, you know, for a guy who made his reputation as a lyricist, not as a singer,
right,
to be putting his voice front and center like this and his band front and center like this, I think this is going to be a really interesting record, and it's called Shadows in the Night.
But no harmonica, as far as you know.
I have no idea.
Could
it's
be.
Dylan. It could be anything.
That's right. He can do anything he wants.
Yep.
All right. Next.
Well, I'm looking forward to a release by a band out of London called Until the Ribbon Breaks. They're part of this kind of R&B neo-soul movement that has given us so many great English singers, from Adele to Amy Winehouse, etc. But their album, which is called A Lesson Unlearned, drops early in the year. It'll be late in January. And they have a kind of interesting blend of old-school acoustic and modern electronic-slash-dance sounds. You see, I would have killed Romeo and saved Juliet, but I don't write stories, no, that time won't forget. So won't you pass me the kerosene? Let's burn to the ground. You've been looking for me.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, the text can, the lyrics can be kind of dark, even as the song has this almost placid kind of slow jam texture to it. So that band, Until the Ribbon Breaks, the album comes in January, and they will be touring along with another pretty well-known London group called London Grammar here in the States.
I like that. I like that. It's sort of upbeat Bon Iver.
Yeah.
All right, so for huge monster acts, I actually can't really believe this is going to happen.
The Who hit 50. That is not just a statement of fact. It is the name of their two-leg nationwide tour in 2015. And they may be hitting 50 as a band, but as you may know, John, they still bring it. I mean, they are incredible live performers. The two, I mean, as long as you have Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey, probably showing a little more chest than he needs to at his age. But, you know, they are committed, enthusiastic performers, and they will be touring around the country in 2015.
Nobody ever returned their ticket from a Who concert, that's for sure.
So that is definitely something to look forward to. The Who hit 50.
Hit 50. Gosh, I remember when I hit 50. You remember when you hit 50?
I do.
Yeah.
It wasn't so long ago.
We didn't have a concert tour. Maybe that's next for us. Schaefer and Hockenberry hit 60. Something to look forward to in the next decade.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go back to that I Want to Kill Romeo song. Maybe I'll... I don't know. Forget it. I was going to substitute your name for Romeo, but that would just be me.
All right. Yeah. filled with anxiety about age talk, John Schaefer and John Hockenberry. Schaefer, host of WNYC's Soundcheck. It'll be a great year.
I hope so, John. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hope out there for 2015.
Hey, my name is Jonathan from Beaverton. I'm excited to turn 30 in 2015 and finally grow up.
And I love this goal for 2015.
Hi, Martin Acuna, Holbrook, New York. I'm most looking forward to texting the takeaway in 2015.
Be a part of our listener response network. You text us, we text you. Sign up and we'll ask you a question featured on the next day's program. Your voice becomes part of the on-air conversation. Text the word START to 69866. Messaging and data rates may apply. You can reply STOP to opt out. Thanks so much for listening. You can't opt out of that at this point. That's our program. I'm John Hockenberry. Here's to a great 2015. This is The Takeaway.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people, by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost With important news, they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.